Call for Action presents Of Consuming Interest, a public service show that discusses scams, deceptive offers, and other consumer concerns. Here's the director of WUSA 9 Call for Action and your host, Shirley Rooker.
Our healthcare system has undergone tremendous changes under the Affordable Care Act, what some people call Obamacare 1, at least that's what today's guest calls it. Now, are you aware that coming down the road is Obamacare Part 2? My guest, Twyla Brays, is the president of the Citizens Council for Health Freedom, and she's also the co-founder. She's also a public health nurse and speaks to this from a level of experience in dealing with patients and also looking at it as a private consumer. Okay, so we kind of know what's going on with, let's call it Obamacare 1, the Affordable Care Act that we know about so far, is having some serious problems. Matter of fact, there was an article in the Washington Times this morning talking about the cost of this and how it actually is costing more now than Social Security, which is a little bit scary given the fact that our country's in such dire economic straits. Anyway, but let's leave that aside. Let's talk about the delivery of medical care and how you see it changing down the road. Now, I guess it would be a good idea, Twyla, if you want to give us kind of a synopsis of where we are right now in Obamacare.
So, as you said, Obamacare 1, that's what we call it. That has to do with all the exchanges, the penalties, the mandates, the high deductibles, the narrow networks, the fact that there's a lot of sick people now getting care, and they come in and they get care, and then they leave when they don't need it. And so the exchanges are having difficulties. The 12 of the 23 Obamacare co-ops have closed. This is all having to do really with the coverage portion of care. The coverage portion of health care or the coverage portion of Obamacare, but there's the delivery side. So the only reason people want coverage is because they're afraid that when they get sick or when they get hurt that there won't be access to care for them. So they want coverage so that they know there will be care. But Obamacare 2, which is what I call it, is the part that the American public doesn't really understand, and that is the whole transformation of care. The shifting of the power from the physician and the patient to the government and to corporate managed care executives. And this is all part of Obamacare, the part that people don't see. And in essence, there's a whole bunch of pieces. So like the electronic health records that were mandated in 2009, and this was considered the foundation of Obamacare because once they have the data, they can make the rules using it. So there's electronic health records, the payment controls.
Okay, now just stop there right just yep. One moment, and let's just talk, if we can diverse and talk about those digitized health records. Okay.
Sure.
Does that mean that everybody who's in the system now has a health record that's on a computer somewhere that's accessible to anybody? Well, not anybody. That's not fair. But to hackers or to people who have access to use it?
So there were the law got passed in 2009, and the mandate was for January 1st, 2014.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a mandate that's a quasi-mandate. It means that any doctor or hospital that does not have a government-approved, government-certified electronic health record and is not using it meaningfully, as defined by the government, can receive reduced Medicare payments. That means that most doctors and most hospitals around the country, almost or above 90% of them, now have some type of electronic health record in trying to avoid those penalties. And so that means under HIPAA, as I think I've talked about here on your program before.
Oh, yes, you have. Which really does not ensure our privacy. Okay.
Right. It doesn't assure our privacy, and as a matter of fact, it opens up our medical records, and electronic health records makes that very easy for the government and myriad others to get in without our consent.
Okay, so we have the privacy issue, there's the hacker issue, and all of that. which we know could be extremely important. Okay, and I interrupted your train of thought. I apologize for that. But I wanted to clarify for our listeners what you were talking about when you talk about the electronic records, that this is across the board. If you don't want to receive reduced payments for Medicare and Medicaid patients, then you have to digitize. And that means that most all the hospitals and doctors in this country, unless they decide to exclude those types of patients, they have to comply. Is that correct?
That's correct. And I should say here that the electronic health record is not like an electric version or a computerized version of your medical record. It is not the same at all.
Okay.
It includes finance information and insurance information. It includes government reporting information. It has all sorts of things in it that are not part of the paper medical record.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why some hackers have infected electronic health record systems with something called ransomware.
Mm-hmm.
They shut down the entire system so that they can get money to open it back up
because
the record has become so valuable for the operations of the clinic and the hospital, not just caring for the patients, but the entire operation,
mm-hmm.
that they can get that kind of money because this is a very different creature, the electronic health record, than the paper medical record.
And so it didn't just have to do with how healthy I am or how sick I am. It has to do with everything else about my life as well.
It's
okay.
Right. As well. It's a combination of the whole kit.
The whole picture. They're going to find out all about Shirley Rooker. Don't look. I'm not interesting. Okay. I promise I'm not interesting. Okay. So these are some of the things that have happened under Obamacare One, as we're calling it. Okay. So we're seeing the healthcare the insurance providers. United Healthcare just announced that it was drawing out of the plan, which means that they will not offer plans to people through the government. Is that what that means?
That's correct. Yep, they have dropped out of 26 systems, so they have pulled back significantly. And of course, they have the ability to do so. They're the largest health plan in the entire country, and mm-hmm. in fact, in the entire world. And so they have the capacity to do that, but they also have the capacity to thrive better than all the rest, and they're pulling out. So, you know, from our perspective as a free market, freedom-minded healthcare organization, we would be happy if all the health plans dropped out and thereby the system collapsed, and we would get back to the states being in control of the what happens to their constituents rather than mm-hmm. the federal system. But again, that's all about Obamacare One.
Okay.
Obamacare Two has to do with what's happening between you and your doctor and all of the outsiders who are getting in the middle and changing the decisions of your doctors, using those electronic health records to track you and to track your doctor and to pay your doctor less if your doctor doesn't do what outsiders want your doctor to do.
Oh my goodness.
And that's really the guts of Obamacare, to where the main piece of it is really to take over the patient-doctor relationship using the access to the data and using payment reform or payment methodologies
mm-hmm.
to encourage the doctor.
Sure. Let's just take a brief pause here to let our listeners know they're tuned into of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Twyla Braze. She is the president of the Citizens Council for Health Freedom and the co-founder of that organization, a nonprofit organization that's looking at the delivery of health care and what's going to be impacted by the second phase of the Affordable Care Act. Okay, let's get to Obamacare 2. Now, while this is initially started out, and I think if you read information about it, and I don't think most people have, I certainly have not, until I saw the article that you had written about the people who are going to be making decisions in terms of what kind of health care I'm going to receive. I take it that this is seriously going to impact. There's going to be somebody between me and my doctor, is what I'm trying to say, I guess. Would that be a fair statement?
Yes, and I think there are two major Obamacare entities that have been set up to make that happen. One of them is waiting. It hasn't actually been set up, and that's the Independent Payment Advisory Board, otherwise known as IPAB. They will decide for what things money will actually be paid and for what kind of services there won't be any money. That is not set up yet, but it is waiting in the wings. But the other one is fully functioning. And the Associated Press says that the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Innovation, which they call the Innovation Center, has 360 staff. I call them busy bureaucrats working, and they have 70 different innovation experiments. And these are essentially experiments on patients. Some of them are voluntary, some of them are mandatory or compulsory. And for the most part, I think you would find if you went out there on the street or even in the hospital and said, have you ever heard about the pilot projects or the experiments that the Innovation Center is doing on patients at the bedside? Most people would say, what?
Mm-hmm. Well, the Innovation Center, that's such a benign sounding, name. You don't look at that as being something that's going to really affect the delivery of the health care that I receive. So what are the goals here, I gather, are to have people outside the medical profession deciding what kind of treatment we're going to receive based upon our medical records. Is that fair analysis or summary?
Yes, and based upon outside agendas. And so okay. I think, you know, it's really good to take an example of what is happening. So
okay.
a recent compulsory or mandatory example is it's called the Comprehensive Joint Replacement Initiative. And so this has to do with Medicare patients, but they say in the rule that this is essentially an experiment, that if it goes the way they want it to, they intend to expand it beyond just joint replacements. So imagine you're a Medicare patient and you're 80 and you break your hip. Now, if you're in one of the 67 metropolitan areas across the country and the 800 hospitals within that area, if you come in with your broken hip, you are now part of an experiment, a government experiment about a different way to pay doctors. And so the government has decided to classify or determine what an episode of care costs. So if you have a knee replacement, they'll come up with a price for an episode of care. If you have a hip replacement, they'll come up with the price for episode of care. If your doctor or hospital, or the combination of the two of them, spend more money on you than what the government has decided an episode of care should cost, the hospital has to pay back the government the difference.
Oh, my God.
If, on the other hand, the hospital and its doctors spend less on you than the episode of care, at the end of the year, the government will give to the hospital a reconciliation payment.
Twyla, that's encouraging less care for the patients.
That's correct.
Oh, and my gosh, not, this is scary.
Mm-hmm. But it's not limited to that. The episode of care can extend out 90 days past discharge, and the money has to be used for all the conditions that that patient experiences during that time, except for cancer and a few others. So, you know, if you have congestive heart failure and you broke your hip, that money has to cover the care for your congestive heart failure.
Is there some point where the government's going to say, well, this person's too old, let him die?
But see, the government isn't going to say that. That's
the
whole plan here with the Innovation Center.
The
hospital and the doctor will say it.
They're putting the burden on the providers, but yet they're the controllers.
That's right. And this is the way Obamacare is moving. So another example is called alternative payment methods. And so they want to pay doctors either in a lump sum or a bundled payment according to a diagnosis or according to over a year. So there's something under Obamacare called an accountable care organization. And a lot of people in Medicare are just being put into it without their consent. And a lot of people who are in the private sector who haven't arrived at Medicare yet are in accountable care organizations. And the whole plan is that there will be this lump sum payment to take care of a population of patients. And that population, as these ACOs say. They don't, these hospitals who are really, an ACO is really a hospital combined with either contracted clinics or employees that are like employed doctors, right? Mm-hmm. So they'll get a lump sum payment for the year, for instance, to take care of their entire population. But they don't actually know who's going to walk in the door. But they know that they have to divvy it out over the year. And so these kind of alternative payment systems, which are either called bundled payments or lump sum payments, or alternative payment methods, are all meant to turn the doctor and the hospital into the rationers.
My gracious.
Twyla,
I don't understand. This is really, I mean, I have to sit here and tell you that this is a little scary. Now, I'm old enough that I'm under Medicare, all right? How am I going to know if a decision that's made by my doctor is being affected by this Obamacare too?
Right.
Am I going to know? I'm not going to know, am I? Am I going to be?
Well, no. You're not automatically going to know, which is one of the reasons that we're working to create something that will help people to know the right kind of questions to ask when they get into the hospital, like, are you part of an accountable care organization? Is this an ACO? Mm-hmm. Right? That's one thing. The interesting thing about the joint replacement project is that in the rule, the federal government says, we will warn Medicare patients so that they, if they don't want to come to the hospital to be part of this, they have a choice to go elsewhere.
Yeah, but how are you going to find elsewhere? Where is
elsewhere? There's at least two questions. One is, how are you going to warn them? Who are they? Are you going to warn them with their broken hip in the ambulance? Are you going to warn them once they've arrived? And then what are they going to do with their broken hip, right? Where are they going to go? And then if you're in one of these metropolitan areas, are you going to find an ambulance driver to take you outside the metropolitan area to a non-experimenting hospital? Likely not, right?
Oh, my gracious.
And what if the doctor that you need is in this hospital? You know, doctors are not all alike, and
no,
for many, many reasons. And you have to find a doctor who really has the skills and the personality that you need for you.
Mm-hmm.
But what if you can't find it outside of one of these 800 hospitals?
Let's just take a brief pause here and
sure,
let our listeners know they're tuned into Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker, and my guest is Twyla Brays. She is the president of the Citizens Council for Health Freedom, and she's also the co-founder of that nonprofit group. And we're Twyla, how can people get information on the busy bureaucrats, as you call them?
Sure. They can go to our website, cchfreedom.org, cchfreedom.org. And if they want to get the commentaries, which is what the 360 bureaucrats was or is, that the commentaries come out every week on Wednesday, and they can just sign up at the top of the homepage at cchfreedom.org.
Okay. All right. cchfreedom.org, you can get information on this. Now, I guess what concerns me is that the population isn't going to know what's happening to them. And here,
right,
I live in the Washington, D.C. area, and I would be willing to bet that every hospital around here is going to be covered by this mandate, or whatever you want to call it, from Obamacare 2. And how would I go about finding a doctor if the hospital doesn't want to really treat me or doesn't treat me? I guess what I'm saying is this raises a level of anxiety, or should, in people who are eventually, many of us end up in the hospital. I've fortunately had my knees replaced, Twyla, so I don't have to worry about that. But it's kind of astonishing to me, starting with my personal physician, the way they're going to be paid is going to be so different from what it has been. What's this going to do to the level of care that I receive? Or, as you point out in your article, actually, since most all doctors accept Medicare and Medicaid patients, even though they may have a large population of younger patients, they're going to be affected by this because they have to abide by it for all their patients. Is that correct?
They don't have to abide by it for all their patients, depending on which piece of this we're talking about.
Okay.
But the fact of the matter is, I think it's very telling what the Associated Press said, and I think it is very true. They said that these 360 people at the Innovation Center, quote, are trying to change the healthcare system using the government's premier insurance program as leverage.
What I don't understand is, what is the goal here? Why are we trying to destroy our health care? We've had the best health care system in the world. What in the world is going on here? We're not even delivering efficient medical assistance to the people that were supposedly going to be covered by Obamacare One. I mean, their premiums are going up and everything else is going up. What's going to happen to this whole health care system?
I guess I'm not being very impartial
here, am I?
No, but you're a patient.
I'm a patient.
You're a citizen.
I'm coming at that, right. I'm coming in as a patient.
That's
consider,
right.
Concerning.
Who doesn't want somebody to get in the way of the doctor's decisions about your personal care? But the fact of the matter is, on a bipartisan basis, there is this move toward value. They only want to pay the doctor for value. They get to define what value is. And because we have so much of our health care today that's paid for by a third-party payer, not by you, right? Not by the patient. The patient often has an insurance company, mm-hmm. or they have Obamacare, or they've got Medicare, right? Those people who are paying the bills have decided that they are going to take control of the doctor so that they can keep more money for themselves. And on a political angle, if you're sitting in Congress and you're one of those members of Congress and you're looking at Medicare and you realize Medicare has a $43 trillion unfunded liability, and the political ramifications of Medicare totally petering out is not what you want to have happen on your watch, right? So then what do? You control the doctors so that you can tell everybody they've got coverage, and you just don't tell them that their care is getting clipped. Their care is getting restricted.
This may mean that you don't get a treatment. You don't get some delivery of service that would have made a difference in your recovery. Your hospital stays are going to be shorter. There's going to be all kinds of things. Right now, hospital stays are very short. I'm not sure that's a bad thing, actually. But is it going to be actually denial of service that we're going to find? Is this 80-year-old person perhaps not going to get their hip replaced?
That's entirely possible. It's also possible that somebody who's 80, they get their hip replaced, but with a cheaper joint, right?
Now, here's the thing. You're locked into Medicare. You don't have a choice. Do you? I mean, do citizens have a choice? I don't believe so.
They do not have a choice if they want to keep their Social Security. And I should tell you that this is not a law. It's not a rule. It was a decision years ago by an administration to put it in a little handbook of conditions of participation. And so it says, and there was a court case against it, which unfortunately the Supreme Court decided not to hear, which was ridiculous. It says that if you don't take your Medicare Part A, you lose your Social Security benefits. And if later, let's just say you're on Medicare for 10 years, and, you know, in the 11th year, you figure out that under Medicare, doctors are going to start restricting your access to care, and you've got enough money, and you want to get out of Medicare. So you're going to leave Medicare. You are going to have to pay back every cent that you got from Medicare and Social Security if you do that. And again, not a law. Not a rule.
Really?
Somebody's executive decision that needs to be ousted from the books. We need a president who will just strike that out of that book, because it's not a law, it's not a rule. Somebody's decision, and that's what the government is following, even though it's, you know, basically illegal.
Good Lord. So if I were to change my mind, anything that I had done while I've been under Medicare, I'd have to repay.
That's right.
Oh, my gracious.
Yep.
Boy, whoa, I'm in up the creek. Look, Twyla, you have given me so much to think about. This is, and I hope our listeners will think about it too. I guess we need to know what's happening, you know, and in the long run, maybe this will be a good thing. Who knows, these changes? It just scares me, because I don't like the idea of somebody getting between me and my doctor and some person, nameless person, making decisions about my health care. That I think is what concerns me, and I'm sure it concerns a lot of citizens, and obviously it concerns you. We will have to address as many of these other issues later, because I can't believe we're out of time, but it's been a great having you on. My guest has been Twyla Braze. She is the president of the Citizens Council for Health Freedom, and you can reach them and get their information at cchfreedom.org. You can also donate to the organization. I'm Shirley Rooker. You've been listening to 1500 AM Federal News Radio. Thank you for joining us.
Of Consuming Interest is a public service program presented by WUSA 9 Call for Action, hosted by Shirley Rooker. Call for Action is an international nonprofit network of hotlines which offer free and confidential assistance. If you have a complaint, contact Call for Action at 301-652-HELP. That's 301-652-HELP.